Hi, everybody. This is Ramble Redhead Show, and we'd like to welcome you today. Today we have a great comedian that I want to introduce you to. His name is Eddie Sarvati, and he is from New York. And what I'd like to do is welcome Eddie. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Well, great. And I hope you're doing well.
Very well, thanks.
Well, good. And what I'd like to do is, again, thank you for being part of the program. And what I'd like to do is just get a little bit about yourself. So you are from New York. Is that right?
Yes, I was born in New York City. I grew up in the suburbs on Long Island.
Okay, great. And are you an only child, or you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother who's 4 years older.
Okay, great. And, well, one of the first questions I always like to ask my guests is, well, obviously you are a homosexual. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what I was wondering is, how old were you when you first realized that you were gay?
Probably about 12 or 13. Although I knew, that was the first time I had put a label on it, but I knew when I was really young, like 4 or 5, that I was attracted to men.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember being taken to the locker room, you know, with my dad at the swimming pool and being fascinated by the men's body.
Oh, really? Did you ever say anything or do anything
Not
about
it? Not that I remember.
Okay.
No, but and I remember when I was, you know, 13 and I, you know, I realized what it was about. I knew instinctively that I couldn't tell anybody.
Okay. So when you did, you know, realize it later in life, did you tell anybody initially right away, or what did you do?
I didn't tell anyone, I guess, until I was, you know, I had my first encounter with another guy when I was maybe 16, and then, I sort of came out to friends my senior year at college, and to my parents, like, maybe a year or two later.
Okay. And I'm just curious, what was that first, you know, the first person you told, what was that process like for you? Were you really worried about it? Did it stress you out? And then what was their reaction?
I actually was kind of, I hadn't told any of my friends at college, but I, there's an actress named Nancy Marchand who played the mother on The Sopranos.
Okay.
And my senior year at college, she had come to teach an acting class. And we had to prepare a monologue. I prepared a monologue from a play called As Is, which is an AIDS play from, like, 1985. And I did the monologue, and she really liked it. And she said, "Are you a homosexual?" in front of the entire class. And, they were all my friends in the class, and I said, well, I've had some experiences, and that sort of prompted my friends to ask me questions after class.
Oh, really?
So it was kind of awkward and amusing at the same time.
So what was their initial reaction then? What did they say to you then? What kind
they
of questions?
They didn't care. You know, I mean, they were all cool with it. I mean, they were all theater people, so no one really cared.
Right. Okay, so, well, then you mentioned about your family and your folks. I was just, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I came out to my parents. I came out to my mother and my father separately, but the same night. And it was really, really hard for me to get the words out. And they both said something that was really peculiar. They both said, "Oh, your brother's going to be really upset about this." Which I thought was really a weird reaction.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. My brother was sort of like an uptight guy.
Okay. So, I mean, did they say anything else about it?
I mean, they told me they loved me and, you know, that they asked me how long I knew. And, you know, by the end of the night, I mean, we were sort of cracking jokes about it. So it was fine.
Okay, good. And did you eventually did tell your brother?
Yeah, I was telling my grandmother, and she was getting kind of upset, and the phone rang in the kitchen, and I heard my mother pick it up, and I could tell from her voice that it was my brother calling from Chicago, and she yelled to me, said, Ed, pick up the phone, and I said, "Not now," you know, and then I hear from the kitchen my mother over the phone going, "He can't come to the phone, he's telling Grandma that he's gay." So then I, you know... you know, then I sort of didn't have to tell my brother, but I called him later, and he said he always knew and he didn't care.
Okay, well, cool. So overall, you know, as your coming out stories, you know, pretty much everybody was really cool about it, right?
Yeah. Did of anybody, I was very fortunate.
Well, that's great. I mean, again, that's one of the things that I'm trying to focus on, you know, especially for the younger people, so that they're listening, that, you know, that hopefully, you know, if they are having any type of struggles, that, you know, right. That it can be a positive experience when you are ready to, you know, accept yourself and come out. Well, you just hinted at the story about your coming out process with your grandmother, and for those who may not know this, Eddie wrote an essay, and it's called Second Guessing Grandma. And it's in a book called When I Knew. And I was just wondering, can you tell us a little bit about that and how you became part of that program or part of that book?
Well, a friend of mine who's a comic who's been on your show, Bob Smith, was asked to submit a piece for the book. And he mentioned my name to the editor, Robert Trachtenberg, and Robert called me and said, could you write something? And so I wrote this story about coming out to my grandmother, and they included it in the book. And even though the subject of the book was when people first knew they were gay, they liked my story, even though it was about coming out to someone else, and they included it.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent, and I thought that, you know, just the way that you wrote it, and I mean, it was so real to me. You felt like you were right there watching it, like it was a TV show, and you're watching
it. Thank you very much.
It was really good, and I love the ending of the story, and I don't know if you want to talk about it or you want to make everybody go out and buy the book, but it was...
Well, I mean, you know, there's plenty of other great stuff in the book. People like Bob Smith and Jackie Cohn and Ophira Kurt and Judy Gold.
Mm-hmm.
Great little bits in the book.
Yeah.
Basically, I came out to my grandmother, and she, you know, she was 90-something, and, you know, she loved me, but she, you know, she didn't really get it. And she, you know, she didn't really get what homosexuality was, I don't think. She would ask kind of weird questions, even though I had told her, and she said it was fine. And then my mother suggested I give her the copy of this book called Now That You Know, Now That You Know, which is recommended by PFLAG, Parents, Friends of Lesbians and Gays. And I gave her the book, and I left to go back to my, you know, I was living in New York by that time. When I came back 2 weeks later, I realized that the book had been read, and I said to my grandmother, Grandma, did you read that book? And she said, yes, it's disgusting. And my heart just sank, because I thought, oh my God, she thinks it's all disgusting. And I said, it's disgusting, and she said, yes, it's disgusting. Some of the parents don't love their children anymore. And then I completely broke down and cried, because it was sweet.
I mean, it is. It's really touching. And I was just telling a friend of mine about the interview that I was doing with you today, and I told him about that story, and then he's straight, and he's got 3 kids, and he just said, wow, Tom, that's really a powerful thing right there. And he said, I'm glad that you're having him on the show, because that's what people need to hear. And, you know, they need to hear that people are accepting, and that, you know, that it can happen, and that if you can't find it from, you know, maybe your friends or family, then you know that they're always going to be an outlet for people who can. And I'm really glad that you shared that story, because it really means a lot, and I think it's really, really cool. And I really, again, I want people to check out the book. Again, it's called When I Knew.
Right.
And what's the name of the author for that book again?
The editor is Robert Trachtenberg.
Mm-hmm.
And it's put out by Reagan Books.
Okay, great. And just so the listeners know, I'll put a link on my site for this show as well. And also, I wanted to, you know, I always like to make sure we talk about the guest website, and I was wondering if you could share that with us as well?
Yeah, my website is at keeplaughing.com.
Okay.
And I also am part of a site called funnygaymails.com, which includes me, Bob Smith, Jaffe Cohn, and Danny McWilliams, and we do a show that's like an evening of gay stand-up comedy. We're all very different in content and style, and it's really a fun evening.
Okay, great. And are you mostly in New York, though, as far as the shows
go? Yeah, I live in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I've just been working. I haven't been performing so much. Since I got such a good response to that piece in the When I Knew book, I'm, you know, been working on more pieces like that to put together, propose a collection.
Okay, great. And is it... on, you know, similar stories like the one with your grandmother, or what?
Yeah, I mean, they're all autobiographical about, you know, one is about a guy I was involved with who was a terrible cheapskate, and one is about being stranded home with my parents for the summer between college. There's one about, you know, going on a trip to Europe with my parents when my father was suffering from the early stages of dementia. You know, so some of them are sweet, but they're all kind of funny and quirky, and I think it'll be a good collection.
Okay, great. And obviously you have a lot of good information on your website, and one of the things that I really enjoyed was some of the video that you had of your act, and one of the jokes that I thought was really, really, really good, and I was wondering if you could mind telling us that one, was your coming out when you first realized that you were gay, and you came out to your mom, and what she had said.
Yeah, well, you know, I tried being straight. I mean, I had a girlfriend in high school, and, you know, we had sex, and I thought it was great, but I was confused. You know, I really didn't know what was going on, so I went to see my guidance counselor, and, you know, the sex with him was so much better.
Yeah, I really like that one, because it's got a good zing at the end, and you're not expecting that one.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's really good. What about your debt joke? Do you remember the debt joke?
My debt joke? You know, because I'm very in debt on my credit cards, and you can't just pay the minimum, because you end up paying more. I mean, I figured it out. I spent over $670 on a bucket of buffalo wings I had in 1992.
That's good. Well, that's true. I mean, credit cards will kill you. And,
oh, my gosh. They're killing me right now.
Well, what I would like to do, I mean, obviously, we kind of jumped around a little bit, but you said that, obviously, you came out to a lot of your friends when you were in college. And I was just curious, where did you go to college?
I went to Vassar.
Vassar?
Yeah.
Okay, and how was that for you?
It was great in a lot of ways. I mean, it's a beautiful campus, and, you know, it's an excellent school, and I had a lot of good experiences. Looking back, and even at the time, I had tried to convince my parents to let me take a year off, because I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go to college and sort of flounder around, and my parents were very adamant that I go, because they were afraid if I didn't go right away, then I would just never go. And so I went, and I sort of didn't know what I wanted to study, and I just sort of bounced around and took all kinds of classes that really, you know, my education was good, but the curricula was not cohesive. And I ended up being a theater major, which was great, you know, but the rest of my credits were just haphazardly spread over, you know, 10 different departments.
Right. So when you were a young kid, so obviously getting into acting or, you know, doing comedy, that was never really a goal as a child? Or was it always, like, maybe in the back burner?
When I was nine, you know, I'd been a fat kid, and my parents sent me to a summer camp for the performing arts, and I just loved it. And I took music and theater and things there, so I had such a good experience with acting that I always thought I wanted to be an actor. And I was a theater major in college, and I sort of discovered that I didn't really like the nuts and bolts of acting, like how to, you know, all the things like taking the script apart and what's the author's intent and what's the motivation and how would the character walk and how would the character talk and then putting it back together in some kind of seamless performance. I found it kind of overwhelming, and I sort of discovered, you know, the year after college that I liked it much more to be myself. I was studying at the O'Neill Theater Center, and I was telling a story to some people, and they were laughing, and other people would come over, and someone would say, you know, Eddie, tell them the story, tell them the story, and I told the story three or four times, and people were laughing, and then some girl in my class said, that's so funny, you should be a stand-up comic, and that's the first time I ever thought of it.
So after that happened, how soon did you actually get up on stage then?
Oh, no, it was a long time. I mean, it was over 5 years before I ever even got the nerve to do it. And then for years, I would do it like once or twice a year or for a month. And then, you know, then I started to do it more seriously, but still sort of half-assed. And it's only the last 6.5 years that I've been doing it full-time.
Do you remember what your first experience of doing stand-up was like?
I took a workshop with a guy named Scott Blakeman, and, you know, we worked for, I think, 6 weeks trying to develop a set. And then he was the host at a club called The Comic Strip here in New York, and in between the regular acts, he would put us up for 3 minutes. And I got a couple of laughs. I didn't bomb, but I was just sort of, I was sick to my stomach the whole day thinking about it.
Right.
And when it was finally over, I said, okay, I did that. I was afraid to do it, and I did it, and I felt great. And it was so scary that the next week, I actually agreed to go bungee jumping because I knew it wouldn't be as scary as stand-up comedy. And then it was like a year later, I did it again, and then I did it maybe 3 times that year. You know, it was very slow.
Wow. And I was just curious because, you know, I talked with Jim David, I talked with Bob Smith, and then Jason Stewart. And well, that's an upcoming show for the listeners to know. But one thing I was wondering, because obviously writing comedy is probably one of the toughest things as much as doing comedy. I was just wondering, what is your writing process like? I mean, how do you go about it?
It depends. Sometimes I'll sit down and, you know, I'll sit in a Starbucks and just throw ideas on the paper. And, you know, my problem is I have a very short attention span. And sometimes I just, you know, work with a friend who's a comic. You know, Bob Smith and I do it a lot where we just sit and throw ideas around. And it's much more fruitful to work with another person, I find.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, I have a friend, another comic, a woman named Marion Grodin, who's here in New York. And she said that her process is, you know, she just spends time doing things she likes with people she likes and people she thinks are funny, and things happen, and then you write them down. And she sort of she's like a fisherman casting her net. And that's how I sort of do things, too, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I didn't tell you this, but see, a couple of years ago, I had a lot of friends that said, well, you ought to try stand-up. And I was kind of like you. I was kind of hesitating to do it, but then I found out that a local comedy club was doing an amateur comedy thing,
right.
And so I decided to put my name in for it, and I never knew that writing 5 minutes of material could be so excruciating, but
it's very hard.
It is, and then when you realize that, hey, I got a good joke, and then you're like running it by people, and like, yeah, that's not funny, you know, or if I had a disgusting joke, I would always call my mom. And if she would go, ugh, that's horrible, I'd say, okay, that one's going in.
Yeah, you know, and different audiences will accept different things.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, when you're actually live and you're up there and you're doing your show, and I was just wondering, have you ever, I mean, did you ever do any improv, or do you always have your strict, you know, 3 to 5?
No, I mean, I used to, when I first started, I had to know exactly what I was doing, every joke in order,
mm-hmm.
or else I would get too nervous. And now I just sort of know where I'm going to start and what my closing joke will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do jokes that I've written, but I try to, you know, things happen in the audience. You have to address it. If someone says something, or, you know, the waiter drops something, or, you know, whatever, you have to address that.
Right.
But I'm not so improv-oriented as some other comics.
Right. Well, I was just wondering, speaking of that, other comics, I was just wondering, do you have any role models or people that you've looked up to or maybe have worked with that you really admire?
You mean who's... Well, I love, like, you know, people like Henny Youngman and Woody Allen and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned a lot working with Bob Smith, who's a great writer. I love watching Judy Gold because she's fearless. The audience,
right.
You know, and then I just think people are brilliant. Some people, I love people who are original. I love a lot of old comics like, you know, Burns and Allen or Phyllis Diller, you know, people like that. Who, you know, and you know, little bits of other people here and there. It's hard. I can't think of a big list right now. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just curious if you had anybody in mind, like Phyllis Diller was one of Jim David's, and as well as Jonathan Winters, and
those. Winters is great.
Yeah, I mean, see, a lot of the younger people right now, they have no clue who Jonathan Winters was, but he was a classic comedian,
yeah.
And he was amazing with all the voices and things that he would do, Because I remember going home and watching TV, and he'd always have that one show. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was really hilarious, and it was really good. And, well, one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, because obviously you talked about your college life and then how you started to get into the comedy, but I was just wondering, did you have, over the course of, you know, of your life, did you have any long-term relationships, and what was that like for you?
I after college, I was involved with someone for about a year, and then I was involved with someone for about 3.5 years.
Okay.
And then my longest relationship was about 8 years, and that ended about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And we're still very good friends. He's really a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually was dating a guy for the past 10 months who broke up with me last weekend.
Oh, no.
So I really was, you know, sort of, I'm in kind of a funk about that.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
You know, he's a great guy. We'll be friends. And, you know, who knows, maybe he'll change his mind.
Well, I hope so. Because looking at your pictures, you're an awesome-looking guy, and you're a funny guy, and you do some great things. And I was looking at your website, and I also noticed that you also do some fundraising things, and you've done things for, like, Lambda and the HRC, as well as a lot of other groups.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it's great to support things when you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm happy to do that. It's great to be able to perform for gay and lesbian people, especially when you're not in a big city like New York or Philadelphia or San Francisco or whatever. Because, you know, in New York, if you're gay or lesbian on a Saturday night, there's a million things to do. If you're in a little town somewhere, there's not. There's like the one bar, you know, or the one organization. And so to be able to go to these places and, you know, meet other people, you know, aside from like the gay ghetto in New York City is really fun for me.
Okay.
I think people are really appreciative of out performers coming there.
Well, great. Now, one thing I did want to ask you about, because I know Jim David's very active Live Evolved, and I know that Bob Smith was too, and is that Broadway Cares, that Equity Fights AIDS, and they did a Comedy Cares program. Were you part of that too?
You know what? Jim is the guy who runs that,
mm-hmm.
and Bob performed at it this past year, and I performed at it the year before.
Okay.
They don't always have the same people, but I guess I've been involved with it.
Yeah.
Done a couple of other things for them as well.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's a great cause, and it's
of course.
And I'm gonna be interviewing some of the people from that organization as well. That's gonna be coming up as well. There's gonna be a lot of interesting stories there too. So, a lot of the people are wanting to do something and, you know, talk about their, you know, lives and being part of the program and all the different things that they've done over the years. So it's really, really exciting. And so I'm really happy that you're part of that. I just wish that I could get to New York more often so I could check some of these out. But unfortunately, when you live in the Midwest, that's kind of hard to do. But, well, that's good.
I'll have to come out your way.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'd love to have you here. Because I know that...
Only performed once in Indiana at Ball State University.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to talk with the local comedy people at the comedy club here. And then we also have a gay bookstore or resource center that's just opening up, and they were very influential in getting like Jason Stewart to come to our area. So maybe that'd be great if we get you and maybe Bob and some others. That'd be awesome. Well, speaking about your schedule, I was just wondering, do you have any upcoming shows that you'd like to talk about? Maybe the listeners would like to check you out if they're in your area.
Yeah, well, for the month of July, I'll be performing in Provincetown. Doing a show with a lesbian comic named Michelle Ballin, who's very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And in all of August, I'll be performing in Algonquin, Maine with Bob Smith.
Okay, great.
At a place called Club Inside Out. And that'll be the summer, and I hope to be working on my book the whole time. And next month, I'm working on a cruise for Romance Voyages, 10 days in the Greek islands. So I'm really looking forward to that. That should be beautiful.
Well, that sounds just awful.
Yeah, that's awful.
I'm being sarcastic here. Have you been on a cruise before?
Yeah, I work for both Atlantis and RSVP and also for a company called Aquafest.
Well, cool. Now, being one of the comedians on the cruise, is that part of the package of you being on the show, or Did they give you a great deal or what?
Yeah, well, usually, I mean, they pay for your airfare to the disembarkation point. They pay for your cruise. You're allowed to bring a friend. And then they, give you a check at the end. It's a nice deal.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and on the gay cruises, you end up just doing two nights of work and two shows. So it's really easy.
Wow.
In terms of the time commitment. And the rest of the time, I'm just a guest and meet people and have fun.
Well, that's great. I mean, I love going on cruises. I think I've been on 6 or 7 of them so far, and it's just amazing. And for any of you listeners that haven't been on a cruise yet and you thought about doing it, it's definitely worth doing. I haven't been on a gay cruise, though, yet. What do you think about those?
You got to go on the gay cruise.
Why?
It's a million times better.
Why is that?
Well, because the people are fun. I've worked on cruises that were mixed, and, the gay people everyone's friendly, it's more relaxed. They participate in all the activities in a really fun way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, if you talk to the crews on the ship, the staff, they will all tell you that the gay cruise week is their favorite week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool because, I'd have to agree with you because, I've always wanted to be on a gay cruise because, that way if you have a partner and you're wanting to walk down the deck and you're holding each other's hand or if you want to kiss, you don't have to, hide in the dark crevices of the ship, And, I remember one time when my partner and I had been together and we wanted to get a nice picture of each other. So here we are in our suits and we look really good and there's all these lines of straight couples waiting to get their pictures taken and we're just standing there like, okay, and then the photographer was really cool. He kept saying, okay, we'll do it this way, put your hand here, do this. But but then after a while, he had all these people just staring at you like you're some stranger. And I'm like,
right, exactly.
I'm like, hey, I'm paying the money.
Vacation.
Huh?
It's your vacation.
Exactly. And so, first it was a little intimidating, but then the next night I said, you know what, screw it. I'm here to have fun. I want to do this. I'm not going to worry about it.
And it totally
changed the way I looked at things. And I think that's what everybody else needs to do. You just need to be open. You need to be honest and not be ashamed of who you are because there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Exactly.
And so you just got to be out and proud. Well, what I was wondering is that obviously, being a stand-up comedy and you've been doing this for a while and you've been – and I was just wondering, what was the funnest experience that you had as far as doing stand-up? Did you have any –
Yeah, the funnest experience I ever had was I got booked performing at a nudist event. And there were like 900 naked guys.
Wow.
They were the best audience I've ever had. They were great.
Well, did you have any more?
It's an event called GNI, Gay Naturist International, and it takes place every August in the Poconos. And they take over a campground, just like a summer camp for kids. And, it's just very silly. There's, like, canoe races and arts and crafts, and there's a talent show, and, everyone's naked. It's just silly. And it's not, like, people hear nudist, a gay nudist thing, they think it's going to be, like, a big sex thing, and it's not. It's just really relaxing, and people were really friendly, and, you're naked for half an hour, and you forget it. You forget that everyone's naked, and goofy, and they were a great audience, and I it was a real sort of challenge my fears kind of thing for me to be naked on stage in front of 900 people.
You were naked?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it was really a fun event.
Wow. So you actually did it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's easier to do it if everyone else is naked. I mean, I don't know that I could do a show where I was naked and the entire audience was dressed. That would seem a little scary. But, maybe that's the next, hurdle I have to jump.
Well, had you ever done anything like that before?
No, I was a fat kid, so I always had body image issues. And, I never, even at home, I would always, wear stuff. I never walked around the house nude. But for about 2 weeks before this event, I practiced. I walked around the house naked for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Because you feel different. Like, when you sit on the furniture, you just feel different if you're naked. And it was fun. And now I'm much more at ease being naked.
Wow, that's cool. That's interesting. So what would be the weirdest or strangest thing that you ever had happen?
As far as comedy. Weird or strange enough?
Well, I mean, like maybe weird or...
Bad weird?
Yeah, like bad weird. Like for example, when I did my comedy, again, it's an amateur thing. You know, there's 8 people that had never done this before. They're getting up there, and I remember getting up on the stage. And see, the funny thing is that people don't understand that the light is shining on you, and you cannot really see, except for maybe the people right in the front row. And I was right in the middle of my set. I'm nervous as hell, and I look down, and there's this guy. He's got his arms crossed. He's got the meanest look on his face. And he was
he's daring you to make him laugh.
Right, and I was just like, oh my God, this guy is so serious. And I almost wanted to say something to him, like, hey, you can laugh at my jokes too. You know, I know you're here for somebody else, but you can still laugh. And the guy just sat there. He's like, stern look on his face. I mean, I would even my best joke at the end, he was just like, it didn't even go like that at all. I mean, he got nothing out of this guy. I was just like, man, so... I was just wondering if you had anything like that happen.
No, the worst experience I had was, I think, I was hired at this event that was about 1,500 people, but it was some kind of fashion show was going on right after me. So everyone was expecting this big fashion show with these big, beefy guys and, you know, swim trunks and stuff. And no one was sitting, everyone was standing, and they were all very crowded around the stage. And they were all talking and, you know, smoking and drinking and laughing. And they announced me, and I came out, and the lights went up, and no one stopped talking or drinking or laughing.
Oh, no.
So it was like a complete roar, and no one's paying attention. And so I had to try and do some jokes. And eventually, after like a minute or two, I said, well, this is just pointless. I mean, no one's even listening. And walked off.
Wow.
You know, and the people who had organized the show were very apologetic.
Yeah.
You know, so it was fine. But,
well,
you know, you feel crummy when that happens.
Yeah, you can take it all the wrong way. And But they're all a bunch of being assholes. Well, I was just, I mean, I know that, you know, you talk about your book, you talk about your website, and I was just wondering, is there anything else that you want to talk about or share with the lovely listeners?
Not right now. I think we covered it all.
Okay. Well, then what I like to do is, as my listeners know, that I always ask one last question. And what that is that obviously the people listening are mostly a younger generation. And I was just wondering, you know, looking back at your life and as a gay man and, you know, the stories with your family and the work and things that you've done. And I was just wondering if you could provide one lesson you'd like to share to maybe a younger person so they could learn from your life. What do you think that might be?
Well, I have two, actually, if that's okay.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
The first one is, have a sense of humor about it. You know, it's so important that it'll, you know, help you through anything, to be able to laugh at it and not take it seriously. And the other thing is to be kind, you know, to be kind to yourself and to be kind to other people. Nothing, especially, you know, as a gay person, you know, when it's so hard to be a gay person, you know, when I see gay people who, you know, say racist things or anti-Semitic things, or, you know, gay men who say terrible things about lesbians, or, you know, or some gay men will say bad things about effeminate gay men, and, you know, I just think that's just awful, and, you know, it doesn't do anything for anyone. And, you know, people should be kind to each other, be kind to, you know, we're all in it together.
Exactly. And, you know, and like I was talking to another friend of mine, I thought it was so amazing because I saw the show and they were talking about, you know, the gay lifestyle and how, you know, people hate the way that they're portrayed and the stereotypical comments like, oh, they're flaming or whatever. But then I was, you know, sitting down and talking about this and I said, you know, it really is amazing that the one group that doesn't like to be stereotyped is the group that does it the most. You know, like,
right.
we're tops, we're bottoms, we're daddies, we're bears, we're... You know, I mean, all the different,
right. yeah.
you know, characteristics, and it's just really sad that, you know, why can't we all just accept each other for who we are and what we are? And because, I mean, like, they had a show the other day about, they're talking about Noah's Ark that's on Logo, and they were talking about how all the characters were really, you know, to the extreme. One had to be the male, one had to be, like, the female character, one had to be,
right.
like, the daddy, you know, and all that, and I'm like, you know, come on, you know, it's just... you know, it's just the way people are, and you just have to learn to accept each other. So that's a great advice, and I really appreciate you, being on the show today. And again, oh, no problem. And again, I'd like to make sure everybody knows about your website. Again, it's keeplaughing.com. Yeah. And then the other one is the Funny Gay Males, is that right?
Funnygaymales.com.
Right. And they can check out your site. They can check out some videos of you, talk about your fundraising thing that you've done, any upcoming dates that you just mentioned. You can get more information on that. And you can also join your mailing list so people can get more information. So when maybe you're in the area, that they could check you out. And that'd be great.
Excellent.
Okay, great. Well, I thank you so much for being part of the program. It's really an honor, and I wish you all the best, okay?
Okay, thanks, Tom. Good luck to you, too.
Okay, thank you. Well, everybody, that is going to conclude today's episode of the Ramble Redhead Show, and I'd like to thank you for listening today. So if you'd like to, please go to my website at rambleredhead.blogspot.com, as well as you can email me at rambleredhead@gmail.com, and I'd love to be able to hear from you. And also, if you could please do me a favor, and you can go to my voicemail and leave me a message and let me know what you think of today's show. And all you have to do is just call this number. It's 574-203-4263. Again, that number is 574-203-4263. And again, I'd love to hear from you. I'd also like you to go check out my Frapper map, which is at Frapper, frapper.com/RambleRedhead. As well as, I'd like to ask you for one more favor. If you could please go to iTunes, if this is the way you get my show, if you could find Ramble Redhead on the podcast site, and also if you could write a review for me. And hopefully it would be a 5-star review. I hope you're enjoying the show that much. And if you could please just write a comment, put that on there, because I like to get as many responses on there as I possibly can. So again, I appreciate all your support. I appreciate all the emails that I've been getting, and I hope to hear more from you soon. So take care, and have a great day. Bye-bye.